Let's get our attention back into the Word of God, because that's why we do this. I want you to go to Joshua chapter 23, where we are going to see the final words of Joshua. It starts out by saying this: a long time afterward, when he who is had given rest to Israel from all their surrounding enemies, and Joshua was old and well advanced in years. And then I want to stop and let you know that the Jewish people have a long-standing tradition that Joshua lived for about 25 years after Moses died. And so that would place his death on the chronology that we're using right now in 1392 BC. And it would also mean that he was about 45 years old at the time of the spy, when he and Caleb were the two good spies that went into the land, which is just a few years older than Caleb would have been at that time. So it seems to match kind of what we would expect for his age in the stories that we've told so far. So it would appear that for a quarter of a century after going into the Promised Land, Joshua was present. Now, he was living in his particular city, Timnath-Serah, which is in the hill country of Ephraim, about 10 miles from Shiloh, 10 miles from Shechem. And there's nothing really saying that he did any type of overarching leadership for the entire nation during this time. It seems as if he came as the one that brought them into the Promised Land and worked for 6 years at breaking the power of the 30-something fortified cities in the Promised Land, and then oversaw the divine appointment of the allotted territories to the 12 tribes and the Levitical cities and the cities of refuge, things like that, the movement of the tabernacle up to Shiloh at the center of the area that they were in control of. And then he seems to have gone to his own place and focused on that. Now, as we've been talking the last few days, it would appear that things began to unravel after the allotments had been given, that quite a few of the tribes were not pushing the Canaanites out. They were letting them stay, or letting them even come back in and take over and rebuild places that Joshua had kicked them out of and destroyed. And they were even turning some of the Canaanites into forced labor, letting them have their lives, but as slaves. None of this was according to the plan. And so in the book of Judges, which overlaps with the last part of the book of Joshua, you know that the angel of God got after them and even said, I am not, that is God, saying, I am not going to chase the Canaanites out anymore. So Joshua, as he's coming to the end of his life, is frustrated by all of this. So he wishes to make one final address. And he's particularly interested in talking to the leaders. Now, he's almost 110, because that's how old he'll be when he dies, which means that the next bunch down from him are going to be in their late 80s. They were the leaders of that first generation that came into the Promised Land. And so he is focused on them and their failure to follow through with what they should have done during the last few years. Verse 2, Joshua summoned all Israel, its elders and heads, its judges and officers, and said to them, I am now old and well advanced in years, and you have seen all that he who is your God has done to all these nations for your sake, for it is he who is your God who has fought for you. So that's a reference to the 6 years of Joshua's conquest, when he broke the power of the Canaanites in those, I think it's 31 fortified cities. Verse 4, behold, I have allotted to you as an inheritance for your tribes those nations that remain, along with all the nations that I have already cut off from the Jordan to the great sea in the west. So he reminds them in the 7th year that they were in the land, they all got together at Shiloh, they divided up the properties according to the divine lot, and now they're supposed to be taking that over and living in it with God's help. Verse 5, he who is your God will push them back before you and drive them out of your sight. You shall possess their land just as he who is your God promised you. So Joshua is trying to tell them, if you will just get it right, if you will just trust him, God will push them back. Now, God has already reacted to the fact that they're not trusting him and saying, I'm not going to do it. If you're not willing to live according to the covenant and trust me, then I am not going to just magically drive them out in front of you and let you benefit from that. So Joshua is trying to promote proper behavior, which will result in the proper response from God. Verse 6. Therefore, be very strong to keep and to do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, turning aside from it neither to the right hand nor to the left, that you may not mix with these nations remaining among you, or make mention of the names of their gods, or swear by them, or serve them, or bow down to them, but you shall cling to he who is your God, just as you have done to this day. For he who is has driven out before you great and strong nations, and as for you, no man has been able to stand before you to this day. One man of you puts to flight 1,000, since it is he who is your God who fights for you, just as he promised you. So Joshua again is reminding them of what God had done when they did trust him. Just a handful of them could take a whole army on and get them out of there. And they can have that again if they will just live by the word. That's the focus here. Joshua's saying, get back to the word. Get back to the basics. Verse 11. Be very careful, therefore, to love he who is your God. That's the great commandment, remember. For if you turn back and cling to the remnant of these nations remaining among you, and make marriages with them so that you associate with them and they with you, know for certain that he who is your God will no longer drive out these nations before you, but they shall be a snare and a trap for you, a whip on your sides and thorns in your eyes, until you perish from off this good ground that he who is your God has given you. So he lays it out very clearly. If you guys do blow God off, like apparently was starting to happen, then you guys are going to get kicked out. That was the thing that God said through Moses in the book of Deuteronomy to them. You're supposed to get rid of the Canaanites because of their sinfulness. If you engage in that same sinfulness, you'll be gotten out of here as well. Now, verse 14. Now, I am about to go the way of all the earth, meaning I'm going to be dying soon. I can feel that. I know that. He may have even been prophetically aware of it. You know in your hearts and souls, all of you, that not one word has failed of all the good things that he who is your God promised concerning you. All have come to pass for you. Not one of them has failed. That means getting out of Egypt, being taken care of in the wilderness, coming into the promised land, defeating the Canaanites on that first 6-year run through, having the territory allotted All of that has happened exactly as God promised. Verse 15. But just as all the good things that he who is your God promised concerning you have been fulfilled for you, so he who is will bring upon you all the evil things until he has destroyed you from off this good land that he who is your God has given you. If you transgress the covenant of he who is your God, which he commanded you, and go and serve other gods and bow down to them, then the anger of he who is will be kindled against you, and you shall perish quickly from off the good land that he has given to you. So you can tell from that what Joshua is worried about. Just like Moses, he's worried that they're going to fail. That despite all of the things that he has done, despite all the things that God has been doing, this generation, or the next generation, or the generation after that, is going to go away from God and bring judgment. And Joshua doesn't want to see that. I mean, he's invested a lot of effort on their behalf. I mean, he was Moses' assistant for 40 years in the wilderness. And then now, if the tradition of the Jews is correct, he's spent 25 years being their leader militarily after Moses, and now kind of being the grand leader in his old age of these people. So 65 years he's invested since the time of Egypt in these people. So Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel to Shechem. And he summoned the elders, the heads, the judges, and the officers of Israel, and they presented themselves before God. Now, I find it interesting that he brings them to Shechem, not Shiloh. Shiloh is where the tabernacle is. Shechem is where the covenant stones have been raised up. Remember the stones that were whitewashed, and then the words either of the book of Deuteronomy or possibly all of the books of Moses were engraved on them, and it would have been a quite an interesting shrine area where Israelis could come and read for themselves the word of God. I think he picks this place on purpose because of that. So Joshua said to all of the people, "Thus says he who is the God of Israel, long ago your fathers lived beyond the Euphrates. Terah, the father of Abraham and Nahor, and they served other gods." So he takes them all the way back to when their ancestors were polytheists, believers in many gods. Verse 3. "Then I," meaning God, "took your father Abraham from beyond that river, and I led him through all the land of Canaan, and I made his offspring many. I gave him Yitzhak, and to Yitzhak I gave Jacob and Esau, and I gave Esau the hill country of Seir to possess. But Jacob and his children went down to Egypt. And I sent Moses and Aaron, and I plagued Egypt with what I did in the midst of it, and afterward I brought you out." So Joshua is repeating the words of God, going back over history. History is really important. It anchors us in where we need to understand we've come from. Because only when we understand where we've come from will we know where we're at. And only by knowing where we've come from and where we're at will we be able to go where we need to be. That's the reason history is important. Verse 6, "Then I brought your fathers out of Egypt, and you came to the sea. The Egyptians pursued your fathers with chariots and horsemen to the Red Sea. And when they cried to he who is, he put darkness between you and the Egyptians and made the sea come upon them and cover them. And your eyes saw what I did in Egypt. And you lived in the wilderness a long time. That'd be 40 years. And then I brought you to the land of the Amorites, who lived on the other side of the Jordan. They fought with you, and I gave them into your hand, and you took possession of their land, and I destroyed them before you. Then Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, arose and fought against Israel. And he sent and invited Balaam, the son of Beor, to curse you. But I wouldn't listen to Balaam. Indeed, he blessed you, so I delivered you out of his hand. So this is all about how they annexed the territory east of the Jordan because those Amorites tried to wipe them out. And God turned the tables and gave more property to the Israelis. And when Balaam tried to help the Moabites take them out, God turned that around as well. Verse 11, and you went over the Jordan and came to Jericho. And the leaders of Jericho fought against you, and also the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, and I gave them into your hand. So that's a description of the conquest years, those first 6 years. I sent the hornet before you, which drove them out before you, the two kings of the Amorites. It was not by your sword or by your bow. I gave you a land on which you had not labored, in cities that you had not built, and you to dwell in them. You eat the fruit of vineyards and olive yards that you did not plant. So God's just setting the record straight. In those first 6 years, and in the year previous to that, when they were still over on the east side of the Jordan, God is the one that gave them all those victories. He even softened up the Canaanites by sending stinging insects, hornets, in, and making the Canaanites more likely to run away. So God did all of that so that they could move into the Promised Land and even move into cities and towns and houses, properties that they hadn't worked hard for. Now comes the challenge, verse 14. Now therefore, fear he who is, and serve him in sincerity and in faithfulness. So Joshua is back on his challenge here. You guys, you know the history. You know where we came from. You know where we're at. You need to revere God. You need to know that He is the one and only. And you need to serve Him and Him alone. And then comes the knowledge of Joshua on the reality of the time. Put away the gods that your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve he who is. So he knows that gods were carried in the wilderness, in the tents, hidden away. And he knows that now that they're in the Promised Land, there's plenty of the Israelis that are either secretly or somewhat out in the open worshiping images. And remember the Danites clear up in the north. They say they're worshiping Yahweh, but they're worshiping an idol. You need to knock that nonsense off, Joshua says. Verse 15, if it's evil in your eyes to serve he who is, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your fathers served in the region beyond the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. So he says, you need to quit doing this both sides of the fence thing. Pick a side. Either serve God, the real creator God, or serve all of these deities that have idols, which aren't really gods. Pick your side. Don't try to do both. And then he leaves no question about it. But as for me and my house, we will serve he who is. Now that gets the people fired up. The people answered, far be it from us that we should forsake he who is to serve other gods. For it is he who is our God who brought us and our fathers up from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, and who did those great signs in our sight and preserved us in all the way that we went and among all the peoples through whom we passed. He who is drove out before us, all the peoples, the Amorites who lived in the land. Therefore, we will serve he who is, for he is our God. Now, this is one of the problems when you've got a large group together. There are some of them who are going to be very sincere in responding positively to Joshua's call to be pure, because they are living pure. There are others that will join in because they feel truly repentant. But there's a bunch of them that will either fake it just because they don't want to show disrespect to their elders, and others won't even participate in saying these things out loud. They'll just kind of glower. They'll just kind of keep their mouths shut and glare around at all the people that are getting all worked up into this religious fervor. And Joshua is aware of that. So Joshua said to the people, "You're not able to serve he who is, for he is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgression or your sins. If you forsake he who is and serve foreign gods, then he will turn and do you harm and consume you after having done you good." So he says, don't be playing around here. Because if you blow God off after swearing that you will serve him, he will take you out. The people said to Joshua, "No, we will serve he who is." So Joshua said to the people, "You are witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen he who is to serve him." And they said, "We're witnesses." And he said, "Then put away the foreign gods that are among you and incline your heart to he who is the God of Israel." And the people said to Joshua, "He who is our God, we will serve, and his voice we will obey." So they have made testimony, promises here in front of each other. And so Joshua decides this needs to be made into a documentation. So Joshua made a covenant with the people that day, and he put in place statutes and rules for them at Shechem. And Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God. So this is where the book of Joshua is coming from. It's being written down right now. And he took a large stone and he set it there under the terebinth, which is by the sanctuary of he who is. Now this is not the sanctuary at Shiloh. This is not the tabernacle. This is the sanctuary of the standing stones of the covenant, because they're at Shechem. So he has just added another stone on which he's added even more writing. Joshua said to all the people, "Behold, this stone shall be a witness against it, against us, for it has heard all the words of he who is that he spoke to us. Therefore, it shall be a witness against you, lest you deal falsely with your God." So not only did Joshua write the words of this recommitment to the covenant on this stone, he also says, "This stone heard you. And every time you come past it, when you come to this holy site, it's going to speak against you if you're not keeping the covenant." And so Joshua sent the people away, every man to his inheritance. And so this is happening shortly before he dies. So I'm guessing we're talking 25 years, according to the Jewish tradition, into their history. And the people are going to behave themselves for a little while. Many of the people have behaved themselves fairly well during the past 25 years under Joshua's leadership. But once Joshua is dead, all of that is going to disappear rapidly. Without strong leadership, weak followers fall away. And that's the cycle that we're going to see established in the book of Judges very quickly. When they have a strong leader, they behave themselves. Strong leader dies, they fall into sin. They then get punished by God with God pulling the protections away, and they get underneath the oppression of somebody else, and then they start begging God for a new strong leader. And so when we come back next week, we will start getting more fully into the book of Judges. Enjoy the rest of your New Year's Day celebrations.